It's time for Saturday Sports Talk on News Talk 1400 WDWS Champaign Urbana, where we talk all things Illini along with other area and national sports. Join the program by calling 217-356-9397 or send a text to the Castle Heating and Cooling text line, 217-351-5357. You can also email us at talk@wdws.com. Now, here are your hosts, Lauren Tate and Steve Kelly.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to Saturday Sports Talk here on News Talk 1400 DWS. Here with you for the next couple of hours on this Saturday morning. Phone line is open, 356-9397. If you'd like to join us, feel free to give us a call as we move along. We've got four or five guests scheduled. Mr. Tate, how are you doing this morning?
Doing good.
A lot of basketball news this week.
Yeah, I'll say.
We'll talk more about that coming up. As a matter of fact, our first guest is Chin Coleman, Illini assistant basketball coach. We're going to talk with him a little bit about Io DeSumo and some other items as well. Good morning, Coach. How are you, sir?
Man, I'm doing well. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
No problem. Let's start with Io and making that U.S. under-18 team. And did you get a chance to get out to Colorado Springs to see him during those tryouts?
Absolutely. I was there for about 3 days, and I actually saw maybe six practices, I think, Saturday, Sunday, or whatever they go, 2 days, two times a day. It's a really good event. It was a really good players, I'll be honest with you. The players that they cut can play for us, every last one of them.
So
the guys that they cut were just really good players, and it was a good deal to see him persevere and power through that and kind of play well and place himself among the best in the country. So that was good.
What do you think turned the corner for him in that? Was it, he talked a little bit about, since that time, talked about maybe taking an extra focus on defense. Was that part of it?
He did that, and his basketball IQ, I think more so than the defense. He obviously is a guy who's got great length and he can pick up 94 feet, and he can disrupt defensively and be a ball stopper because of his length. He's 6'4", and got a 6'9", 6'10", wingspan, whatever it is, and 6'5", in height, and 6'10", wingspan. He can be a ball stopper, but he did that. He focused on that, but I think more than anything, they were looking also for guys who had high basketball IQs and who can pick up things quickly because they were putting in things on the fly. And then, as you can see, there were a lot of guys buffering and not really fluent in their movement in terms of understanding where to go, where to be, respecting spacing and things of that nature. And because he's come from good coaching, he's already a little bit ahead of the curve on that stuff. So he kind of was able to utilize what he learned in high school and his AAU coaches and all of that, and kind of use that stuff in that setting.
Chin, this is Lauren. I know that Underwood is not concerned so much about positions, but is he more of a wing guard as opposed to a point guard, or does he fit in one particular category?
He doesn't fit in one particular category. He is a point guard at 6'5". And as you can see, at the next level, all of the guards are now 6'5". You got Ben Simmons at 6'9", 6'10", playing the point. LeBron plays the point. Draymond Green plays the point. The point guards nowadays are bigger. Westbrook is 6'4". They're bigger. So he fits that prototypical big point guard role. But he's obviously, because of his size, He's versatile and he can play in a few different spots. But he is a ball in the hand guard, and he is a point guard and by nature.
Well, how do you see him fitting in with Frazier and Feliz? I would see Feliz as a point guard also, and Frazier has been both. It looks like you've got some real versatility there.
I think, Lauren, if you look at, and obviously you're probably a bigger historian than I am, most of the teams that have won the national championship have done it with multiple ball handlers and multiple point guards. Go back to the Connecticut days. They had Kemba Walker and Shabazz Napier. Then you had Shabazz Napier. Then you had Boatwright. Then you had Villanova had Archie and Jalen. And then now Jalen and DiVincenzo and the other point guard. It's like playing multiple guards and multiple point guards if you want to position them on the floor. It's been successful for a lot of teams. I mean, even when Kansas won it, they had Chalmers and Robinson and our kid from Chicago. So, you know, having multiple guards on the floor has been successful, and it's been successful even in the NBA. You look at Portland; they play two point guards. You know. So, I think that it's a success story that we can possibly utilize.
Talking to Chin Coleman, Illini assistant basketball coach, Io DeSumo, of course, on the USA under 18 team that's going to be seeing some international competition. That means he's going to be late getting here, but that's kind of a you'll trade that, right? You'd like to have everybody here at the same time, but that certainly is good for the program.
Not necessarily would like to trade it. We would prefer him to be here, I think. I'm a little biased. I would prefer him to be here and working out with Fletch, but he's only going to miss a few days. And working out with us and getting our training and getting our system down. But this is something that you can't pass up. This is an opportunity of a lifetime. To have the opportunity to play for gold and to play for your country, I don't think that there's a higher achievement or accomplishment in terms of basketball that you can achieve other than something like this. This will be neck and neck to winning a national championship, to winning an NBA Finals championship, or any of those kind of major accomplishments. I think this will be up there with all of them. So for to have the opportunity to do this, we're so happy and proud of him, because he represents not only his family well, but he represents the state of Illinois. He represents Morgan Park High School, but he also represents the University of Illinois. And for us to be trying to trend where we're trending with this program, he's a great representation of what we want to be about. And he's doing a good job.
Chin, this is Lauren again. I'm going to switch you over to the center position, naturally, because people talking this week about the departure of one of your centers. Now, you've got a couple guys coming in, but I want to ask you this question. Now, let's just take it and break it down: offense, defense, and rebounding. It would look to me like you're okay defensively if you can keep Kane on the floor, maybe. Rebounding, I don't know. How does that compare to last year? And offensively, do you see the center having much of a factor this coming season?
Not at all. If you look at the history of Coach Underwood's teams, he's never had teams that have been big, so to speak. And they've always rebounded in the top of the country in terms of rankings and percentages. So that's something that we preach. That's something that we practice a ton on, is rebounding. And Coach Underwood's teams have always been one of the top teams in the country in rebounding, and he's done it by committee from different positions, not, so to speak, by the one position that everybody wants to centralize on, is the center position. It's been done by more of the wings and the guards. If we can get our guards and our wings to be our best rebounders, that helps our break and what we want to play and how we want to play fast. We want our guards to be our best rebounders, not, so to speak, our bigs. So I think that people look at it a little different and think that the rebounding comes from one position, and that's the center position, and it doesn't. And it's just a committee thing. We want Io to be our top rebounder. We want Felice to be our top rebounder. We want Trent to be one of our top rebounders, or Tevian, or AJ, or Monte. We want those guys to be our better rebounders and our leading rebounders, because if they're our leading rebounders, then now we're off and running and our break is started and we don't have to get another extra outlet pass and our break is quicker and what we want to do in terms of our pace is working and we're operating in our speed, and that's what we want to do. So not really want to put all that burden on a center, because it's not his sole responsibility. If we had it our way in a perfect world, we would want our guards to be our best rebounders.
On the defensive side, there's concern because so many guys like Morgan and Happ and others have returned this year, good centers in the Big Ten. Have we got somebody that can stack up against those guys?
Lauren, you've watched us play last year, and you know how we play. We don't get hurt by bigs because of the way we play. It's hard to throw the ball inside on us because we pressure the wings, we get out and deny, and we play off the ball, up the line, on the line. It's hard to get the ball inside. You saw how we played against Missouri. You saw how we played against Purdue. Hosk was not even a factor. Like those things we're not concerned with because the way we play, we negate those responsibilities from another team. You got to find another way to beat us because of the way that we play, and that's not one of them. So we're not really concerned with that. I think that the masses is concerned with that, but they don't. They have to have a better understanding of tactical what we do and how we play, and that's not something that we're concerned with in terms of we don't get hurt by bigs. We just don't, and because of our style of play defensively, we don't get hurt by bigs. We don't let you throw it into the post.
I think the masses are also a little concerned with the number of transfers. Of course, the latest is Greg Ebogordon, and I butchered that name a little bit. We'll call him Ebo. But does anything surprise you anymore, Chin, about guys and their decisions to stay or go?
Not at all. Not at all. I mean, whatever his personal reasons was, we love Greg. He had a good time here. We felt like had he persevered and been here, he would have continued to get better and find a niche in the Illinois men's basketball program. But for his personal reasons, he wanted to leave and pursue other things. I don't even know all of them. But for us, we wish the young man well and hope him nothing but success. But we're concerned with the people that want to be at the University of Illinois. And we got a top 12, top 10 recruiting class coming in, and we're feeling great. We have a four-star, seven-foot young man, Asamba Kane, who's going to be here. We got Georgie, who's a really good player, who's going to be here. And we're still shaking the bushes for some other guys, and we'll be fine. We'll be fine. We're so excited about our new guys and who they are, what they are. Tevian Jones got here yesterday. Allen got here a little bit earlier in the week. Tevian Jones is consistent top 70 player in the country. We're excited about him. Io is playing for the U.S. 18 team. He's one of the top 12 players in the country in that age. So we're excited, man. We're excited. We're happy about who wants to be with us. I think that's our focus and continue to add to this group. And if we can add one or two pieces to this group, it's already dynamic. Just think of us adding something to it; it'd be unbelievable.
Are there still players out there? I mean, graduate players, for instance, that might be available.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, this don't stop. It won't stop until school starts, and then even after that. I mean, so it doesn't stop. The recruiting trail is an ongoing thing. It's always happening, and we're always recruiting, and we're always searching. So we're going to be looking for pieces to improve this ball club, because we're recruiting to a system. So we're not recruiting just a group of guys and bringing in a bunch of guys and we're figuring it out when we get here. We're recruiting to a system that's been successful for Coach Underwood. He's one of his coaches in college basketball. So we understand what we're doing. We have a clue of what we're doing, and we understand that the popular demand don't understand that, but they'll see it. They'll see it. And once they see it, and then everybody will be happy.
Just before we let you go, some comments about Griffin and Jones, who are freshmen. They look like terrific prospects. What are their features?
Allen is a guy who can really knock down shots. He's better off the deck than people think he is, because he can really get to his own shot, whether that's a pull up, whether that's a three. He can get his own shot off the bounce. He can get him running off screens, and then he's a catch and shoot guy as well. Tevian Jones at 6'7" is the same as him. He can get his shot off the deck. He can get it off screens. He can post up. He's an uber super athlete, so he can play above the rim. But he's at 6'7", and he's just he is the prototypical guard wing that you look at and what they look identical to in the NBA. You look at Tevian Jones, you're looking at a kid that looks like what they look like in the NBA. He has the measurables, the size, the athleticism, the ability to get baskets off the deck, shoot it. He should be a great defender and rebounder for us. He's a big-time rebounder. And those two give us a different dynamic that we haven't had, because you got to think about this. We were playing a little bit undersized on the wings. Sometimes you would see Trent and Tijon on the floor together with maybe Amante or Mark Smith. That's 6'3", 6'2", 5'9", 5'11". Like, now you're talking about Io at 6'5", Adrian at 6'5", Tevin Jones at 6'7". So we've corrected some things in terms of getting longer, taller, and more athletic in some areas where we needed improvement at. So we've identified some of our deficiencies, and we feel good about it.
Hey, Jim, we appreciate your time. I know you got a busy schedule going there, but always good to talk basketball with you. Thank you.
Man, appreciate you guys again. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Jim.
And go Illini.
Jim Coleman with us, Illini assistant basketball coach here on Saturday Sports Talk. Looks like this part of the state, getting some bad weather. I noticed the radar was heavy up north. Now we're getting a little bit in downtown Champaign as well. So be careful if you're out and about. 75 degrees at 9:16. Saturday Sports Talk off and rolling. We'll take our first time out and be back with more after this. Saturday Sports Talk rolls on with Lauren Tate. I'm Steve Kelly. As we move up towards 9:20, heading towards 11 o'clock this morning, 356-9397 is the phone number if you'd like to jump in. Thanks to Jim Coleman for taking about 15 minutes to talk some Illinois basketball with us off the top. Some more Illini discussion ahead. Marty Kaufman, senior associate, associate AD. Assistant, associate, it's all the same, isn't it, Marty?
Easy to say, yes.
In charge of business development is with us this morning here in the studio. Got in just ahead of the raindrops, did you?
No, I left home before the raindrops, and I ran in here during the raindrops. Yeah, it's changed my mowing plans for the morning, I think.
Well, maybe that's good, but when it does stop, it may be bad.
That's true.
Marty is a big player in the Hall of Fame Gala coming up next week at the Field Museum in Chicago, the second U of I Hall of Fame class, 21-member class, to be honored. Tell me about the preparations that go into that and such. And it's, you don't just show up and have that. There's probably you've been working since last year, right?
Yeah, pretty much. There's a committee, certainly within the athletic department, that's been working on all things Hall of Fame for the past probably almost, 2.5 years, really, since Josh came on board. And the first step, obviously, it was the selection of the team, or the class, I should say, which was announced around February. But I guess that's not really the first step. You know, after the last year's induction in September, you know, we were already well into plans about if we were going to do a gala in Chicago and how we're going to do the induction and then that class. So it's kind of a year-long process, but it's a lot of fun too, because based on last year, when you could tell the honorees and how much it meant to them and their families, you know, we're kind of in the grind of work, but when you actually got to the actual events and just saw how much fun and how honored they were, it made it all worthwhile.
With having it in Chicago, maybe going into last year, maybe you weren't sure about that or how that might work out, but what'd you learn by having it there?
Well, I think, you know, I think it's the one thing about having a gala in Chicago is it's not really an either or. I mean, the induction, when Josh and really Kent Brown was instrumental at the beginning to work to start the Hall of Fame, something that needed to be done, and just nobody was willing to kind of take it on. And we always knew the induction would be in Champaign, needs to be on campus, a chance to get people back to campus. So that's number one. The start of the Hall of Fame was always about, you know, you want to bring your Hall of Famers and people back to Champaign and on campus. I think what coincided is Josh and our folks on our staff really wanted to have an event in Chicago for our alumni base in Chicago, also for people here who wanted to go up, but really something in the city. And the idea of the gala really was a reason, the Hall of Fame was a reason of what that event could be. So it's the Hall of Fame Gala. You know, we'll evaluate it every year. It was great the first year. I think we'll have good turnout this year, and it'll be good again, and we'll continue to evaluate. I think the hope is that it really becomes less about Hall of Fame over the years and more just about the University of Illinois and athletics and a celebration in Chicago, which you know, we have plenty of down here as well.
Let's talk about the Hall of Famers. How many were selected, and how many will be present at this event?
Well, yeah, and I should have had my cheat sheet with me. So everybody who is all the members of the class, except for Kevin Anderson, a tennis player, are going to be there in Chicago. So I think that's 13 members. that are going to be there. It'll be Coach Henson, Dave Downey, Jim Grabowski, Justin Spring, Tara Herless,
Kendall Gill,
Darren Fletcher, Tanya Williams, Selena Monde Milner, missing a few others. There's Scott Langley, Dana Howard. Thanks to Steve Kelly for a cheat sheet here. And then I think I got about all the 13 returning members.
Kevin Anderson, I mean, is obligated, I'm sure, with tennis. Right?
You know, and Kevin,
I know he wanted to come.
Yeah, Kevin's been very responsive. He was excited. He's certainly still has a University of Illinois as part of his life, but he's competing in the ATP events over in Europe. And when he looked at his travel and what has to come first is his professional career, he was concerned about making the trip over just for one night or two nights and back, and he thought it would impair his training, and we understand that.
Probably would. Now, Scott Langley's right in the middle of an event right now.
Yeah, and Scott was thrilled from day one, and Lisa Rusin, who's our director of RCDI, really makes most contact with these folks. And one of the things we knew, this event is a week earlier than last year, and just for a couple of reasons for this year, we moved it up. But we knew that it's U.S. Open week.
Right.
So we know we were going to have trouble with a lot of our golfers, but we can't always change it just for one event. And so Scott Langley tried to qualify on Monday, and it was kind of funny. We in the office, we always want Scott and all the other people to qualify, but there was a part of us going, well, do we really want him to qualify, or do we want him to come to Chicago? And he said all along, if I don't qualify, I'm coming. And it wasn't 5 o'clock Monday night, and he'd send an email to Lee in our RCDI office and said, well, you know, I didn't play well enough to qualify. I'm coming to Chicago. So we're thrilled to have him there. And I should say, you know, the one guy that's going to be there that couldn't make last year's events is Darren Williams. Is going to be there as well. So Darren's going to be there, going to participate. And we're thrilled that he, you know, we knew he couldn't make it last year, and we're thrilled he's coming this year.
And, of course, Lou Henson was the first guy named in this class, and a lot of folks always want to see him.
Yeah, I absolutely. I know you guys, you know, in touch with Lou even more than I am, but I happened to see Lou and Mary this week, and, you know, he looked great, and we're hoping he continues to feel well and good enough to come up to Chicago, and that's the plan now, that he'll be up there with an entire group of family members, and he'll kick off our event for those up there, and so that,
by the
that
way,
his performance is...
That's a black tie event.
I didn't ask what he's wearing, but he's, I know last year
orange.
He wore orange. I think he gets... There was a lot of people who didn't have the black tie, a lot of people who did, but I think we all know that Lou was wearing orange.
Let me ask you this. Who's the guy that's going to tell Lou Henson not to wear orange?
He's going to do it intentionally.
Absolutely.
I asked him about it the other day, and he said, I'm wearing orange. So
yeah.
He'll be the only one wearing orange.
Coach Henson can wear orange. Coach Underwood's expected to wear black.
Marty, if there's people listening that might be considering going up, are there tickets still available, or how's that work?
There's probably still a few. We expect about 500 people there. You know, there's still maybe a little bit of room for movement. You know, last week a lot of things come in and drop off, but there's maybe a little bit of room of movement if you call our development office iFund office, development office. But for the most part, we expect between 475 and 500 there again.
I was just astounded last year what a great event that was. It was just sensational. Anybody that was there, I think, just came away. It was so well run. It was just perfect.
Well, thank you. Appreciate that. It's a high standard for this year.
Didn't you think so? I mean,
absolutely. Sometimes you're a little bit too close to it, so you see the things that weren't quite on schedule but when you step back from it, it was a great celebration. Everybody that was there, at least that I've talked to and people have told me third hand, enjoyed it. And we're hoping for the same type of event this year. You know, Reese Davis of ESPN is our MC. He's done a number of these events nationally, and I think we had a call with him yesterday, and he'll be able to keep it on schedule and move everybody through.
That is the trick, by the way. When you got so many people, you don't want it to run to midnight.
Yeah, absolutely. So, we'll start up there. I think the dinner will start around 7:30 and last, you know, about an hour, and it'll run hour and 45 minutes or so after that.
Lauren and I and Ed Bond will try to get cleaned up, and we're going to head up there ourselves. And
yeah,
we're going to do a special sports talk show, the Loman Ray Hall of Fame Saturday Sports Talk Special.
Wow.
Coming
All
up,
right.
A 3-hour show from 9 to noon. next Saturday. So we'll.
Can you last 3 hours?
Absolutely.
You're not planning on me being an hour and a half of that show.
Well, we'll let you know. It depends on how it gets started. Anybody seen Marty?
I hope to be sleeping, but something tells me that won't happen.
We need a relief pitcher in here, but we're going to try to get as many of these people as we can as guests Saturday morning after that Friday night event, so it should be fun. Keep up the good work.
Yeah, and I just real quick, you know, it'll be fun, and just reminder everybody who can't make it up to Chicago or it's not their bailiwick, you know, the September 21st, 22nd, we haven't nailed down exact time, but either that Friday or Saturday will be the Penn State weekend here, will be when the induction ceremony is here at State Farm Center, and everybody will be able to come out and see the Hall of Famers and listen to their speeches as well.
Good stuff, Marty. Thanks.
Thanks, guys.
Hope you get your yard mowed.
Well, it's a double-edged sword.
That's right. Marty Coffin with us at 929 WDWS Champaign-Urbana. Saturday Sports Talk continues after this. Mm. 932 Saturday Sports Talk in Champaign-Urbana. Steve Kelly and Lauren Tate. Thanks to Marty Coffin for spending a few minutes with us talking about next week's Hall of Fame Gala in Chicago. Also leading off the program, Illini assistant basketball coach Chin Coleman spent some time. We're going to talk some more Illinois hoops now. Kedrick Prince joins us from the Dispatch Argus in the Quad Cities, basketball writer for Rivals.com as well. Good morning, Kedrick. How are you?
Good morning, gentlemen. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we want to talk about a few things Illinois basketball related, but we're going to do kind of like we did with Chin Coleman and start a little bit talking about Ayo Dosunmu making that national team, the USA under-18 team, and what not only that means for him, but for the program as well. Your thoughts on that?
I think it's a great thing for Ayo. I really do. I think it's good because I think he was, you know, he will never admit this. I think he was a little bit upset, and so were the people in his camp, about not making the McDonald's All-American team. And for those people who know Ayo, he is a very, very, very competitive person. I've said this from day one. I mean, he's a Brad Underwood kind of clone player. He's a tough-minded kid, and so was his family. I remember watching an ESPN game when Illinois was playing Michigan State, and Underwood was kind of upset. And, you know, social media kind of took offense to it, but Ayo's mom just tweeted out herself, "We like this." So that family's competitive, and I think it's good for him. And, you know, for the University of Illinois, this is a good PR for the university. It's been a long time. Dan Williams was the last kid, I believe, that, you know, made the USA team in 2002. So to me, it's a good look. It's good for him as a player. And I've also read and told that, you know, he's changed his shot a little bit. It looks different. So, I mean, this is a good thing for him.
I was going to say, Kedrick, that the fact that he was injured so many weeks, months during the season, that undoubtedly affected the McDonald's vote, don't you think?
I think it affected McDonald's vote, and to be honest with you, I think it affected Mr. Basketball. No disrespect to E.J. Liddell. I mean, that award typically goes to a senior. I mean, and, you know, E.J. had a great year, but you're right. With him being injured, it affected his game. It affected his shooting a little bit. He wasn't there. I mean, he didn't put up the numbers. Taylor Horn Tucker was another kid that produced, but Ayo wasn't there. So not that he was forgotten about, but to win that award, you know, you have to be special and put up good numbers, and he wasn't able to play all season.
Talking to Kedrick Prince about Illinois basketball, that's next year moving in when you start watching the Illini. It's one of those deals where you're going to need a program for sure to figure out who's who, so many new faces. Ebo, we talked about him transferring out, another name on the list of transfers. Your thoughts on the exodus and then turn that around on the new guys coming in. Your thoughts on those guys as a class?
Well, just publicly outside the program, you know, and the coaches know what's going on. You know, they're involved. All the coaches know what's happening with it. Outside the program, it's a bad look just because of the timing, especially with Greg. I don't think the number of kids leaving is a bad thing. I just think, from what I've known, Brad Underwood has a system, and he wants kids to fit that system. I don't think the kids that were there last year bought into it or were those type of players. Greg leaving, I think it hurts a little bit, but it doesn't. And, you know, they're recruiting another kid named Ty Jones. I don't know if people know about this kid. He's a 16 kid out of prep school in Florida. Right now he's a 2019. If they can get him to reclassify, he is dynamite. But you talk about a real defender and long. So if they can replace a kid, you know, like Greg with a, you know, kid like High, then there's no love lost because they're going to continue to recruit. I mean, that's the nature of the blood right now. You got to recruit and recruit. And I know they're recruiting kids and they're recruiting him. And this kid is really interested in Illinois, and he has some good schools pursuing him. So if they could, and when you mentioned Illinois to Kai Jones, he's kind of excited about it. So there's a good possibility if they get this kid to reclassify. If that works out, that'll be great. Losing Greg right now, I think, you know, I like the kid. I thought he showed flashes. You know, he and DeMonte and Trent figured out that, you know, that slip the screen, that pick and roll, and he finished around the rim. I don't think he would ever be a starter in the Big Ten. I think he's a backup player at best, but there's nothing wrong with having backup players. I do think we need. I do think they need size. You know, you look at Iowa with Luke Garza and Tyler Cook. It's great to have guards that can rebound, but I'm going to tell you, I remember watching Iowa to Champaign, and LeBron just looked frustrated because they couldn't rebound. Guards weren't rebounding. And, you know, Michigan State with Nick Ward and, you know, with Jones, they just killed Illinois on the glass. And Tom Izzo said it. You have to have some size. Not that you need that size to win. Your guards can rebound, but it sure does help to have some defenders down there that you know that can go get rebounds and not have to fight for rebounds that your guards don't necessarily or may not get.
How much have you learned about Samba Cain at this point? I mean, how does he figure to start? Or what do you think?
With Tavian Jones?
No, I'm sorry, Cain, Samba Cain.
You know what? Looking at the roster, I mean, I will say this. Underwood doesn't care how tall you are. I'll give him credit for that. But talent-wise, I don't see how they couldn't start him. I think he's good enough. I think he will be good enough defensively. He's better polished offensively. I had a conversation with his high school coach, and, you know, it's not fair to compare players, but everybody talks about how Trent was under the radar. And this high school coach told me that he expects that kind of year from Samba because he is better than what people think. I interviewed him, and we talked once, and he said to me that he is going to be, at some point in time in the next 2 years, he'll be one of the top 10 players, bigs, in the Big Ten. His future is that bright.
Well, they're going to need him because they got to have somebody defend the basket a little bit. They did not have that this past season. And, you know, that doesn't – I mean, they spent a whole season or two asking some guys to do things that, you know, that they weren't really capable of. And I think this he probably fits into the situation where he can guard the basket defensively. I don't know how good he'll be offensively, but what are you hearing about him as an offensive player?
He's ahead of Greg Ubogadine. You know, light years ahead of Greg Ubogadine as an offensive player. He's not going to come in and average 10 points a game, you know, right away or 12 points a game. I do think there's a good chance he could average, you know, 9 or 10 rebounds a game because he's long enough to do that. Defensively, I mean, he loves to block shots. And just his presence alone, there were times last year people knew Illinois didn't have their shot blocker. They attacked them. And that's why I think personally, the guards put so much pressure on top, so they couldn't get the ball in the post. But when the ball did go in the post or when people attacked the basket, it was just score will. You know, I mentioned Tyler Cook earlier. He gets an offensive rebound and puts it back because he knows there's nobody there to contest his shot. Samba will be able to at least give people the thought, hey, he's there, you know what, and if he's blocking shots and if he does it and he's successful with it, then that's going to help Illinois defensively because – as hard as they play on the perimeter, like you said, Lauren, that spot down there was just tough. It was really tough for them. It wasn't fair to LeRon Black. And it really wasn't fair to Michael Finke. You know, LeRon came in as a rebounder, but when he left, he was more of a scorer than a rebounder.
Is there another guy in that class, that six-man class, that we're not talking enough about? You think you mentioned Samba Cain maybe as being a sleeper. Is there another guy there that you really like that maybe is not getting a lot of publicity at this point?
I love all the kids that they recruited, and I'm going to be honest because I'm an honest guy. The one I love Mr. Jones. That kid has a high, high ceiling. I mean, I don't think people understand how good he can be. I hope it translates from high school to college. I mean, he had a brother, and I forget his name, and I apologize for that, who played for Missouri years back. And he was 6'9", 6'10". I mean, they think Tevin, by the time he's done and he leaves Illinois, because he's young as well, extremely young, there's a potential chance he may be 6'8 or 6'9 before he leaves. And you think about a guy who's 6'8 or 6'9 with that kind of length on the perimeter who can defend, he can shoot it, and he can finish around the rim. And he, I mean, he is, to me, he can be extremely dangerous for Illinois.
Well, anything else new or different this last week? And we've been so involved with the comings and goings of the squad. Anything outside?
You know, if they're able to try to somehow get tied to reclassified, I know people were talking about Josh Cunningham from Dayton, but I think there's some academic work that needs to happen right there. So, you know, there's another fifth-year guy. They really need something else in the front court because you have to have depth there. You know, right now they don't have that. So, you know, and we're looking at on Rivals, you know, the kids that they're recruiting and kids that they're trying to get to come in to help join this six-man class. You know, it is a great class. I think people focus on the negatives about who's leaving. It is a class that is loaded, and they are long, and I think it's going to be different. If they buy in, if these kids pan out, and they beat some teams they're not supposed to beat, all the kids that left, people are going to forget about them.
Anything new on Jordan Caroline? I know he was in town recently, but sounds like he's going back to Nevada.
Yeah, I think he's going back to Nevada from what I was told. I do think there was at one point in time that, you know, he was giving Illinois a look, and this is before that great run they had the tournament, and now going back to know that they have a successful, because he's going to win. And yeah, if he comes to Illinois, it's the unknown. Yes, it'd be great to be home. Yes, the family history with his grandfather and his dad, Simeon. But if he comes to Illinois, they haven't been to the tournament, and they may make it. But why would you chance that, knowing the fact what you just did last year? I think that played a big part as to why he, you know, didn't give Illinois that good hard look and say, hey, you know what, I want to come home, because it is taking a chance. And I can't blame the kid for that.
Hey, Kendrick, appreciate your time. Thanks for visiting with us and talking some hoops. We'll do it again soon.
Thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it. Have a good day. Stay dry.
You too. Kendrick Prince from the Dispatch Argus in the Quad Cities, also writes basketball recruiting for Rivals.com. 356-9397 is our phone number if you'd like to jump in. We've got a little open time between now and 10 o'clock to get you caught up on some of the headlines in case you missed some of the baseball yesterday and last night. Cardinals 1-10 in Cincinnati, 7-6. St. Louis now 9-0 against the Reds on the season. They'll play again this afternoon, weather permitting. 3 o'clock, Michael Wacha at 7-1 goes for the Cardinals. Cubs beat the Pirates 3-1. Cubs have won 8 of their last 10. John Lester at 6-2 goes this afternoon at 1:20. And all of a sudden, the Cubs are just a half a game, Lauren, behind the Milwaukee Brewers.
And picking up steam.
They really are. They're 36-24 on the season now. Cardinals are 3 games back, 1 game back in the wild card, if you're looking at that at this early date. The White Sox beat the Red Sox.
By the way, before you get off that, you could see 3 teams coming out of that division. I mean, out of the Central Division. The Cardinals, I mean, they don't have to win the division or even finish second to get in the playoffs because the way they're playing. I mean, I'm not saying it's going to happen, but it's certainly it has happened in the past.
All you got to do is get in. How many times have we said that?
That's right.
White Sox did beat the Red Sox, and former teammate Chris Sale won nothing last night. The White Sox 21-40 now on the season. NBA Finals, you know by now, Golden State in a sweep, 108-85 over the Cavs, second straight title, second straight Finals MVP for Kevin Durant.
Well, that first game in the series kind of turned it, and from that point on, it was all Warriors.
A couple of other notes, track and field notes. A local guy, Luke Vaughn from Centennial, who competed collegiately at Memphis and this season as a grad student, won the NCAA Discus Championships late last night with a throw of 198-2. So that's good news. Also, a couple of U of I guys. David Kanzera finished second in the NCAA in the 110-meter hurdles by 1/100th of a second. It was the lean.
Did you see that race?
Yeah.
Man, it was really close. There were 3 of them, and they just finished right together.
And Jonathan Wells was 9th in the country in the high jump at 6'11.5".
Well, Kanzera also got 3rd in the 400.
Mm-hmm. So he won a silver and a bronze.
And that's terrific. The thing that shocks me is how good everybody is. I mean, Wells, when I see a guy high jump 7'5", and I see him long jump 25 feet, I think, man, he got to be in the elite. Well, of course, he didn't get over 7 feet in the high jump yesterday. But to jump, I may not get this exactly right, he jumps 25 feet and finished 16th? Come on. What are these guys doing? They got springboards out there or what?
Well, you mentioned to me a little bit ago that 25, 30 years ago, this would have been really big news, front page news.
Well, it would be. It would have been. I mean, track was really big in those days. And Illinois had very good track teams. And under Leo Johnson, used to compete for the not only the Big Ten championship, a number of which they won, but for the NCAA championship. And they had some of those, too. But it's all changed now, and it's almost a secondary sport until they get to the Olympics. I'm not sure why that has happened, but it has happened.
Our text line.
By the way, Luke Vaughn, you know, I got to mention, because I was great friends with his grandfather, Ekus Vaughn, who everybody in that era knew as a manager of baseball teams, as a bowler, and, of course, at one time, he was the number one ranked Cornhusker in America.
Really?
That's right. And he finished second in the national championships in Iowa with about 50,000 people there to see that. Now, this is a different era. We're talking about a different time.
I used to see Ekus out at Lake of the Woods quite a bit.
Oh, yeah. He liked to bump it around left-handed. But Ekus and Bill, his son, I know really well. I got a message back and forth with Bill this morning. They're really proud of Luke. And he's, you know, it just proves to me it's in the genes. That's all.
There you go. 947, our text line is open, the Castle Heating and Cooling text line, 351-5357. We did get a text that says, for consecutive seasons, Illinois can't get 13 basketball players to come to school for free. How is this a representative power conference program? That's kind of the outside view of...
Well, people, look, we had guys that we couldn't win with. What do you want to do, bring them all back?
Yep.
Is that what you want? I mean, is that your idea of success, playing with the same guys that you knew weren't going to win this year? I think they've got some really good possibilities this year. I mean, I'm not saying it's going to happen overnight, but they needed a change, didn't they? Does somebody want to argue with that point? I'd like to hear it. I mean, do you really want to stay with guys that couldn't get it done last year?
And if you'd like to answer that question from Lauren, give us a call, 356-9397. We'll take a break at 948 and be back with more Saturday Sports Talk after this. Saturday Sports Talk rolls on. Steve Kelly and Lauren Tate, as we approach the 10 o'clock hour, we're here until 11, 356-9397. Is the phone number if you'd like to jump in the conversation here on this Saturday morning. Lively first hour. We talked basketball with a couple of folks, Illini assistant coach Chin Coleman, and also Kedrick Prince. We just concluded a conversation with him. Marty Kaufman stopped by to visit with us about the Hall of Fame Gala coming up next week. Still to come in the second hour, we'll talk with Tom Ackerman from KMOX in St. Louis and talk a little bit about the passing of Red Shaendinkst earlier this week, one of the Cardinal legacy guys, the oldest living member of baseball's Hall of Fame at 95, certainly a longtime Cardinal icon. Phone lines are open. Let's go to Alan in Montrose. What do you say, Alan?
Morning, guys. Talk about the basketball thing. I'm not going to argue about you guys. Talk about what we would have come back, what we've got coming. I realize what's going on. Even if we had LeBron Black back, we would probably have struggled again this year. This is going to be a rebuilding year again. It has to be. We're not going to go to the NCAA. I think it'll be a huge achievement if we make it to the NIT. But Lauren and I got an argument last fall about he said LeBron Black would be our best player. Well, it turns out that he was right. But he shouldn't be if we're going to be successful. We needed other players that was better than him to be successful, and we were not. So that's where we stood. So, yes, we are probably better off without the players that we had. We've got good players coming in, but it's going to take a while.
Well, that's the way it is. I mean, you don't expect freshmen to be able to compete at the highest level? No.
No.
In most cases, that's not, you know, you might have five or six or seven or across the country that are that quality, but you're not going to have many. And Illinois, I think, they started on a path here. It's a dangerous path, but you've got to make these decisions. And they will be better at most positions. They will be better at point, I think, than they were with Lucas. I think Frazier will be better than last year's Frazier. I think that Io is a lot better than Smith was, and will be. And so I think that at the guard position, I hear great things about Williams and his improvement. So I think the backcourt will be okay. I just don't, a front line is just too weak right now, as far as I can see. Now, maybe Tevin Jones can step up, or maybe Kipper Nichols can play the way he did late in the season, and maybe Kane can progress. But we're going to be at a disadvantage at the center position, it would appear to me, and against most of the team. There's so many good players, like Cook is back, and Happ is back, and Morgan's back, and Haas is there. And, you know, I could go up and down the line. Most teams have got pretty good centers. Fernando's back at Maryland. I mean, it's just there's a bunch of them, and it'll be a problem.
I also think that there's probably not going to be any fifth-year seniors left that's going to be worth the hoot to help us out at all. So I think that's a moot point now.
Well,
I think Sean McCain is the key to the season, having any success at all. I think he's the key, in my opinion.
Yeah, well, because that's the one position that we're weak. We think,
right.
But I don't know anything. To say that there aren't any guys left is – you know, that's just a guess as far as I'm concerned. I don't know. There might be somebody left. I mean, Cunningham, what if Cunningham takes 7 hours in the summer and qualifies? I mean, then you got a player Josh Cunningham from Dayton.
From University of Dayton.
He's comparable to Black. He is a player whose ability is about equal to Black.
Okay.
I mean, I'm just saying. I'm not saying he's going to do it, but that's one of the things they're looking at. I mean,
it's
a long way from being over. I mean, you're giving up way too soon, Alan. We've got months to go here before school starts.
I guess there's no way Caroline's going to come since his coach is probably staying at school, right?
Well, we think he's going to go to Nevada, yeah.
Plus, Nevada's going to be really good.
Really, really good.
They got those two twins back.
Yeah, and a fifth five-star guy at the center, and a bunch of they're loaded. They're 8-9 deep. Nevada is.
Well, he's not coming then.
No, we don't think so.
Okay, that's all I got, guys.
Yeah. Hey, appreciate the call as always. Thanks, Alan. 356-9397. We're about 4 minutes before 10 o'clock here on Saturday Sports Talk. A couple of texts to make note of. Here's one that says, "I love the fact that Brad Underwood knows the type of player he wants and isn't worried about what others or fans think." So they, and as Jim Coleman said right off the top of the show, they know what they're doing and what they want and the type of player they want. Obviously, he's going to say that, but
sure. Well, the big blow is that Okoro went to Oregon State. That's the one that hurt. I mean, he's a guy that they thought they would have the inside track on, and they never did. Didn't even get a visit. He wanted to be out of here. Can't do anything about it. I mean, that was when they were really banking on. When they got Io, the feeling was that because they were from the same had the same nationality, that maybe Io could influence him. And the fact that he was over there at Normal, which is really close, and Illinois should have had an inside track on him. Well, they didn't. I mean, this is, you never know. It's interesting to me, Steve, how Illinois got two really good recruits from California and New York, both of with Chicago backgrounds. I mean, the backgrounds mean a lot. Here's a guy from where is it, Nigeria,
mm-hmm.
who went to another school, then transferred to Normal, and he was never settled in one position, in one location. And for us to think that because he was at an Illinois school that gave Illinois some great advantage, I mean, he's an international guy, really. And he got away, and the center position as a result. And by the way, he was not going to be just a dominant center in the Big Ten this year, not as a freshman. He'd have been a wonderful guy to catch if you could keep him 2 or 3 years. The catch there is that even with Myers Leonard, who was never even a top 15 player in the Big Ten, went to the NBA by his third year,
on potential.
On potential, exactly right.
Yep.
And Okoro, that might be the same thing with Okoro. You might get him, and he'd be gone in 2 years.
Let's go back to the phones. Virgil in Homer. What do you say, Virgil?
I was wondering on track, field and track.
Yeah.
Whatever happened to John Davis from Oakwood?
I don't know. That did he not qualify? I didn't see where he was one of the runners that went. I need to check up on that. I wondered about that the other day. I thought, what's happened to John Davis? But I didn't do any research on it. But
he did so well a year or so ago.
Yeah, well, he did well this year. He did, you know, early this season. I don't know what happened.
We'll see if we can find out.
Thank you.
Thanks, Virgil. Yeah. We appreciate it. Moving up on 10 o'clock, WDWS, Champaign-Urbana, Saturday Sports Talk. Hour number one is in the books. We'll be back with hour number two after this. Stay with us.
It's the second hour of Saturday Sports Talk. Join the program by calling 217-356-9397 or send a text to the Castle Heating and Cooling text line, 217-351-5357. You can also email us at talk@wdws.com. Here again are your hosts, Lauren Tate and Steve Kelly.
And welcome back to Saturday's Sports Talk. Our ace crack research team went to work during that break. That would be Lauren Tate, by the way. And in this particular case, sometimes I'm the ace crack research team as well. But the question before the break about Jonathan Wells, Jonathan Davis, we found out the answer.
Well, I checked on FightingLini.com. 2018 outdoor track redshirt season. So he redshirted earlier indoors. Now he's redshirted outdoors. That's why we didn't see him running. He's redshirting.
Going to talk some baseball now with our friend Tom Ackerman, KMOX in St. Louis. Good morning, Tom.
Morning, Steve and Lauren. How are you guys doing?
We're doing well. Kind of a sad week in St. Louis with the passing of one of the favorite guys of most Cardinal fans in Red Shane Dinks. Tell me about your feelings on that, and you've had a few days to reflect on his career and certainly him as a man. Your thoughts on Red Shane Dinks being gone at 95?
Well, certainly he was the heartbeat of the franchise, having been connected to 7 decades of Cardinal baseball, and starting out when he was a player, filling in for Stan Musial in 1945, coming out of Germantown, Illinois. At that time, he said they had spring training in Cairo, Illinois, but it got the baseball diamond got flooded out because the three rivers that run into Cairo had all flooded. So the diamond, they said there was water up to your knees. So they moved spring training to Sportsman's Park. And they had this left fielder, the Cardinals did, that was serving in the military, and his name was Stan Musial. So they asked Shane Deans to switch from shortstop to left field, and he wore number 6. and years later, Musial, they became great friends. Musial told him, he said, you know, I followed you in 1945 when I was in the Navy. I was watching, and you played so damn well. I was worried I wasn't going to get my number back. And as it turns out, of course, he did. They became the best of friends. And Musial and Shane Dean's numbers 2 and 6 are right next to each other on the retired numbers at Busch Stadium. And, he was just an incredible guy that all of us connected with well into his 90s. He was still wearing the uniform. He was going out on the field and participating in, pregame, warm-up, batting practice, talking to the manager, offering his advice. He'd go up to the booth, grab a handful of snacks and watch the game. He spent time around everybody. He always had a nice thing to say, always made you feel like you were the most important person in the room, never had a negative thing to say about anybody. He was just a guy that you wanted to be around, and his friends that were very close to him knew that he was always up for a duck hunt. He was always up for a round of golf, go grab something to eat. He had a great ear. He could listen to and tell stories with the best of them. So I mean, he's just an all-around great human being that will be missed for sure. But we also have chosen to celebrate his life because at 95, he lived a great one.
At 95, with that said, I guess you're never surprised when somebody passes. But had he taken a turn, had he been sick, did this come as any kind of surprise to you folks?
Well, we were going to honor him at the Jack Buck Awards in early December, and his daughter Colleen informed us that because he had just gotten over pneumonia, he and the family didn't think that he'd be able to make it to the event. And then he did have some improvement after that. He was not able to physically make it to opening day in April, but at that point, really, you know, kind of the understanding that he was going to have to stay, you know, at home and not be able to make it out. Although Mike Shannon tells me the story that the last week of his life, and this is just so red, a few days before he passed, he asked his family, he had a couple of family members, asked if he could get in the car and drive out to a friend's hunting property. And he did not get out of the car, but they drove by it and he wanted to see it and go by and, you know, roll down the window. And he had a beer when he got there, a cold frosty one, as Mike said, and just had, you know, that was, he wanted to get out and take a look. That was just so red, you know. He just got out, take a look at the outdoors, get out and do things. And he always said he wanted to surround himself with young people that made you younger. And he was just somebody you always wanted to see what was next. There's no doubt about that.
It just reminds me of what I just read from Charles Krauthammer. I don't know if you saw that, Tom, but he wrote a wonderful article about the fact that he's only got a few more weeks to live, and a great writer, Krauthammer, and I think from his political material was maybe as good as anybody in the country, and yet here he is. He's made a statement, and he's going out the way this is. You know, he's, and I think Red, to a certain extent, probably felt the same way, that he knew it was coming, and he handled it as best he could.
That's right. That's right. So, and
are they going to do anything on the uniforms, by the way, for the rest of the season?
You know, I haven't heard that, Lauren, but I would expect that they would have some sort of tribute to him with the number two. They did have the number two on Thursday into the infield dirt,
mm-hmm.
and they definitely will have tributes to him throughout the year. I would think they'll probably have a number two on the uniform or hat somewhere.
The day he died, I told Steve, I'm glad that he didn't have to watch that Cardinal game that day.
I said the exact same thing. I tried, you know, because everybody at KMOX was down, and we were doing the story, and I walked in Thursday morning, and I said, and I was ready to do all of the stories about Red on Thursday morning. I go, well, I know there's one thing I know for sure. He wouldn't have liked that game last night at all. So,
by the way, I didn't like the one last night either, although they came out on top. My goodness. Cardinals were in trouble every inning the whole game.
Yeah, wouldn't you just like one time to see him just blow somebody out?
Well, I'd like to just go one, two, three, one inning. I'd be great with me.
It was like the game last week, the Waka game, when he was throwing the no-hitter. I mean, they, even in that game, Marcelo Ozuna hits a grand slam in the first inning, and you're thinking, all right, here we go. I mean, you know. It's time to turn it on, and let's go. Let's get a blowout going. And even in that one, they couldn't score really after that. They did tack on a run in the eighth inning. It's been tough to see this team not gain any traction. They lose two out of three of the Marlins, which isn't acceptable. Now they're 8-0 against the Reds. So I'd like to see what they can do to try to finish out this series strong. And then they have the Padres, another last-place team, at home on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and get yourself in a great position for when the Cubs come to town next weekend, because they are playing great right now. They've won 10 of their last 12. They look strong, and it should be a great series if the Cardinals are up for it, and Cardinals are, if they're ready to defend their home turf and get it going.
What's going on with the bullpen? What can they get done to get that turned around?
Bullpen is very iffy right now, and I think one thing they're trying to decide is who's the seventh inning guy. I think we've determined now the eighth inning man is Jordan Hicks, and the ninth inning man for the moment is Bud Norris. But who is the man in the seventh? And one guy who came up, who made a possible play for it, is Sam Tuivasa. He's looking better. I like Hicks, of course, and some other right-handers in that pen. But the left-hand side is an issue right now. And Tyler Lyons is injured again. Austin Gomber, and I think this is part of what Lauren's referring to, because I was watching it last night also. You know, he gets out there, he comes in relief and walks the first man he sees, and you're like, oh, my goodness.
Well, they just wave that first guy down. save the arm. By the way, before I forget it, I want to ask the two of you, because Steve worked at Channel 3, and maybe you know this, Tom, but we had a sports guy at Channel 3, Tom Shaindeans. What was the relationship between he and Red? Was there a relationship?
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think there was. Sure,
you don't?
I don't think there
Boy,
was.
Boy, that's a strange name
it
not
is.
To be related. And
but I don't put me on record on that.
And he was from Southern Illinois, too.
Yeah. Then he left Channel 3 and moved to Arizona.
Yeah, I mean, it is not a common name, but I think in that area of the country, I think it's quite possible that you could have a couple of people with the same last name because of so many that moved to that area years ago.
You mentioned Bud Norris in the ninth inning. Well, twice now in a week, he has blown a save and then got the win. I'm not sure that's the plan they want to go down the road with.
Yeah, so that bullpen yesterday was a tough one. And now, you know, you have Greg Hollins down in Memphis, and he's pitching down there. And the first batter that he faced in his Memphis stint, he walked. So, yeah, they've just got to figure it out right now in terms of the bullpen. And they have enough arms to work with, even with Alex Reyes now injured. They do have their fine in the rotation. They've just got to find the right mix. And I think Greg Holland's a big key to that. If they can get him back, that would be huge. I'm just not sure right now if they need to go outside of the organization. That's quite possible, to find another reliever before the trade deadline. Yeah, I don't know if we're there yet, though, but we'll see.
Well, that's a sad story about Alex Reyes, a guy that had so much potential and really worked hard on the Tommy John surgery to come back and throw a handful of innings and then be out again for the rest of the season. But he's so young, they're just taking a very conservative and careful approach with him.
Very tough story, for sure. I feel bad for him. He's a great guy. And I'm not sure what the deal is there, other than if it's bad luck or if it's the way that he throws, whatever it is, it's a real bummer, because that was a long road back from Tommy John surgery. And for that kid to have to deal with that now again, not Tommy John, but another major situation where he's going to be out 6 months, that's a tough one to take. We'll see if he can come out of that. He is extremely gifted. He was doing some pitches. I was down in Springfield, Missouri, watching him at AA. He was doing things that I haven't seen a pitcher do in a long time, honestly. I mean, the way that he was able to mix his fastball, changeup, curve, he threw a cutter-slider combination that was just absurd. It was pretty impressive. So I'd like to see, Jack Flaherty step up and be a great prospect for this organization. Alex Reyes certainly is, I think, going to be – I think he'll be back. But it's just – that's a tough story, really, for somebody who's worked so hard to get back. I mean, he really did. He worked extremely hard to get himself in great shape and to keep his repertoire strong. You know, he was actually – throwing pitches that could have worked at the big league level in spring training. That's how long of a process this was. And when you start feeling that good, you get a little antsy, but they were like, no, we've got to work on your legs. Make sure your foundation is right. We need to make sure you can throw breaking pitches confidently. And so they continue to work with him on that for an extra almost 3 months. And then after looking spectacular in the minor leagues. He comes out and ends up pitching four innings. He's pitched four innings since the end of 2016. That's a tough one to take.
By the way, what's the latest on DeJong? Is he going to be back before the 1st of July?
You know, I've not heard an update on him, but he should be back fairly soon, I think. That's what I understand anyway. I mean, I've heard just that it's progressing. I haven't heard a date of return for him.
As far as bright spots for the Cardinals so far, I don't see a lot offensively, but I do like to focus on the jobs that Michael Wacha and Miles Michaelis have done thus far, both those guys with just one loss and six or seven wins.
What a great combo. Oh, my gosh, what a great combo they are. I think those two right now have to be in the All-Star game. And Wacha pitches today. Michaelis has been the stopper for this team along with Michael. So I'm very excited about those two. And that's been another great story is Michael Wacha and his return from everything that he dealt with shoulder-wise. He was dealing with a lot of injury. I think it seems like they've got him in a really good place. And Michaelis is just a horse. What a find he was. And a nice job by the front office. And they're not really pounding their chest about it necessarily, but they did the proper scouting. They matched it up. They thought that he would be a good fit. There were other teams that liked him too. Cubs liked Miles Michaelis.
Mm-hmm.
So he came out of Japan, hadn't pitched in the major leagues in 3+ years, and goes out and does this. That is pretty awesome.
Hey, Tom, always appreciate your time. Keep up the good work at KMOX, and we'll talk to you soon.
My pleasure. Good to hear you guys on a Saturday morning. It's great. Anytime you need me.
Thank you. Tom Ackerman, KMOX in St. Louis, has been our guest. We'll take a time out. When we come back, we'll get caught up on some texts here, some topics that are coming in via the Castle Heating and Cooling text line. The phone line will be open as well, 356-9397, on Saturday Sports Talk, back after this. Moving up on 1020 on Saturday Sports Talk with Lauren Tate. I'm Steve Kelly. Phone line's open, 356-9397. Been kind of active on the text line. We'll pass along some of those texts to you here as we move along. Earlier this week, Josh Whitman held kind of a season-ending media roundtable. We talked about several things. You've probably read and heard some of the comments from him on a number of topics. One was this year playing the basketball game, as Illinois has done in the past, at the United Center in Chicago. And we'd asked about whether or not an opponent had been picked for that. And as it turns out, with the Big Ten schedule going to 20 games, it will be a Big Ten game that is played at the United Center. Not sure who yet or exactly when. But here's what Josh had to say about that.
Finding a quality opponent for that game had become increasingly difficult. The return expectation was hard. And so we thought that a nice way to try and approach that, especially with the Big Ten schedule expanding, we never would have taken one of the core 9 Big Ten home games away from State Farm Center. But now that there's a new home game on the calendar, taking that new game up to Chicago, we thought it was something that would get our fans excited and would remove the obligation that we'd have on the back end to return the game. And then vice versa, it allows us to take a new quality non-conference opponent and bring it back to Champaign that had been played up in Chicago. So we think it's a win-win for everybody, and we're excited to try it out this year.
That's Athletic Director Josh Whitman on playing the game at the United Center.
Well, I think if you play Indiana or Purdue or Michigan State, maybe even Iowa, that you're going to get a big crowd for that game, which they need to do after seeing the crowds fall off all the way to 5,000,
mm-hmm,
and playing the game, kind of a meaningless game with UIC there. But if you play Rutgers or Minnesota, I'm not sure that the game will draw. I don't know. Chicago is a little picky that way. I mean, the fans will come out for a big game, but they won't come out for a mediocre game.
That is the topic of one of our text folks here this morning. He has a problem playing a Big Ten game in Chicago with Chicago people not showing up. If we play a team like Wisconsin, they may have as many fans as us.
Well, if you play Wisconsin, it'll be a big game.
Yeah.
And I do think you're giving, there's no question you're giving up the home court, but Illinois would have an advantage over anybody they play. Illinois will get more fans there than anybody else they will play, but the other fan, they'll get some other fans too. It won't be quite like Missouri, where it's been mostly 50-50 or 60-40, whatever. But in Chicago, you got a big group of Illinois fans who will definitely turn out if the game is good enough to attract some.
If you fans have any thoughts or comments on that, jump in here. We've got a few minutes for an open line. 356-9397 is the number. We were talking about high school basketball players and their potential and where they've moved on to or where they might move on to. We get a text from a 217 area code saying, I saw Myers Leonard in high school, and I saw Francis Okoro in high school. There is absolutely no comparison between the two. Leonard dominated in all aspects. Okoro had good footwork around the basket, and he could dunk.
Yeah, I think that's probably accurate. I think that Okoro was probably better defensively. I may be wrong on that. But Myers Leonard was not, first of all, he played in a lower division. And secondly, at Illinois, he was not a superstar as a freshman by any means. Now, he played better as a sophomore on a team that wound up losing, Steve, were the 12 of the last 13 games. And he left after his sophomore year. But he had not made a big hit in the Big Ten yet. Illinois was not a big factor in the Big Ten at all. When he was here.
Let's go back to the phones. Chris, you're on Saturday Sports Talk. How you doing?
Doing good. Good morning, guys. Just calling and following up a little bit on some of the Cardinals stuff there. I like some of what they're doing right now, but I got to be honest, I'm still worried about the schedule and kind of how that's going to come out in the course of the year. Old coach I had in college always used to break schedules into thirds. And the first third of the card schedule this year is our easiest third.
Mm-hmm.
It's tougher in the middle, and the last third is really rough. And you take the first 54 games we played, I mean, we're 30-24, but 10-2 of that was against Cincinnati, the White Sox, and Kansas City. They're three of the five worst teams in baseball. We're 20-22 against the rest of the world. And that seems to sort of continue. We aren't going to get that favorable a split as the year goes on. So I think, I think it really is a rebuilding year that the front office down there didn't want to call a rebuilding year. Just got so many guys who are really rookies, prospects.
Well, so many injuries. The
injuries on top of that. Yeah, no question. But. And so some of that's what's bringing the guys up, too. But I think they were counting a lot on that. And you know how that goes. I mean, I don't care how many home runs you hit or strikeouts you get in Memphis. You come up to St. Louis, the numbers don't stay the same. The only number that gets higher when you get to St. Louis is the number of errors. Now, and so these guys, they'll be good. They just aren't consistently good right now. I mean, you mentioned the game last night against Cincinnati. That was an ugly game against a really bad team.
It really was.
And, the series before that with the Marlins, that's another one of the five worst teams in baseball, and you lose a series at home against them. So we got a lot of question marks. It's going to be a long season, I think.
There's just too many games, if you're a Cardinal fan, that you're looking at, I don't like the way this is going. And last night was one of those. They were ahead 5-1. Mm-hmm. And
yep.
And Weaver ended up walking five guys and had some good defensive plays behind him that helped get him out of a jam, but you still didn't feel very good about the way the game was going. And it turned out that they gave up two in the bottom of the ninth to have the game tied, then they ended up winning it. But a lot of those kind of games.
Oh, yeah. Well, compared to last year, we've done real good this year with walk-off wins. But a walk-off win is usually one out away from being another loss.
That's right.
Knock on wood, though, they've been going our direction. Otherwise, I hate to think what the year would be looking like.
All right, Chris, thanks. We appreciate it.
Yep.
356-9397 is the number if you'd like to jump in. And if you're out and about this morning dodging raindrops and you've been thinking about replacing any windows or doors in your home, I'd like to suggest a trip to the Pella Window Store. 1001 North Country Fair Drive. And that'll help clear up what can be really kind of an overwhelming situation. It's not a, something you do every day to replace windows or doors. Mike Mary and the Illini Pella team have been fixtures in the community for more than 40 years. There are many choices in windows and doors, and the Pella Window Store has 8 patio doors on display in their showroom. If they don't have it there, they'll show it to you in a catalog and online. They'll not only help you decide what's best for you, they'll stand by product with a limited lifetime warranty. Illini Pella offers one-stop shopping, really, for windows and doors, the products, the installation, and financing as well. Window and door shopping is not something you do every day, so you'll want to get it right. Do your research, set your budget, work with the pros at the Pella Window Store, then show off your new windows or doors to your family and friends. The Pella Window Store, 1001 North Country Fair Drive in Champaign. They're open until noon today during the week. Their hours are Monday through Friday, 8 to 5. They also have stores in Danville, Decatur, and Bloomington. Check them out online at PellaOfChampaign.com. 1029, Sports Talk on Saturday morning continues after this. Scooting along towards 11 o'clock on Saturday's Sports Talk. Talk some baseball, some basketball, a lot of other things. Hall of Fame weekend next weekend. We'll talk more about that coming up. We've got a special show lined up for you next week in Chicago around the Hall of Fame Gala. It's the Loman Ray Insurance Hall of Fame Saturday Sports Talk special edition next week.
3 hours? Are we really going to do 3 hours?
You are. I'm going to be there for moral support. Yeah, we're doing 9 to 12.
You are carrying me. That's your job.
There are 21 inductees into the Hall of Fame, and my goal is to have, obviously some of those folks aren't with us anymore, but of the living members, we hope to get 12 or 13 of them or so to be on the show with us next Saturday. That's a big undertaking, but we're going to give it a shot, and we'll talk more about that as we move along. Let's talk some Illinois football now. Doug Bouchon, our friend from Orange and Blue News, Rivals.com, is on the phone with us. Good morning, Doug.
Hey, good morning, guys. Hey, thanks for having me on again.
Yeah, no problem. Wanted to just kind of get caught up with you. What's going on with the football team? They did get a commitment yesterday from a junior college player from Champaign, Dominic Stampley, a wide receiver. So put him on the list. He would have 3 years of eligibility remaining at the University of Illinois, played at Coffeyville, Kansas College. Did you have him on your radar? What do you know about him?
Yeah, they offered him about a month ago. He's a local kid. You know, he played at Champaign Centennial High School and didn't qualify academically and went, you know, to Coffeyville to play. And he's a slot receiver. You know, I watched his film. It looks more like a kind of a all-purpose running back on film than he does a wide receiver. But he'll play slot receiver at Illinois. They like him. He's a quick kid. You know, pretty decent feet. Kind of a depth piece, I think, at the wide receiver position. And, you know, you can always use those local kids on your team that are all in for the Illini. And he always dreamed of playing at Illinois. Now he's going to get his chance.
Well, tell us what you think, Doug, about the receiving core. Beyond Dudek and Stampley, Smalling, yeah, I'm sorry, yeah, Smalling, what does it look like?
I think they need a third receiver for sure to jump out. I think, lack of playmakers right now. And they're bringing in some guys, I think, in the freshman class that have a chance. A kid like Carlos Sandy from Florida, I think, is a good slot receiver. They need some guys to step up. They lost Malik Turner to graduation. Dudek has been hurt off and on, of course, missed 2 years with the knees. And, Ricky Smalling is a budding star. He's going to be a really good player. But, you know, they need some guys to step up. I think they'll have a chance to do that in this spread offense. What we saw in the spring was guys getting a separation a little bit better, I think, with the combination of routes in this offense. It's a better offense for the wide receiver core for sure. And they're going to try to spread teams out horizontally and get guys in space. So hopefully one of these guys who haven't shown much yet are going to jump out and have a breakout year.
Does this bring us, is this 6 recruits they have committed? And if that is the number, how does that stack up with the rest of the Big Ten?
It's about average, you know, as far as numbers go. I think they need to have a good June. I think they will. They're out on the camp circuit, camps in Texas. They're out at the Rising Stars camp in California, two camps in Chicago. And, you know, and I think on June 15th, when they have this Friday Night Lights camp in Champaign, and they're going to have a bunch of visitors on campus for that also. And I think they got a good chance to get some more commitments. And, you know, they started the class out with a bang. They get, you know, Isaiah Williams, the dynamic quarterback from St. Louis, Marquez Beeson from Texas, a four-star player, the top, you know, top 100 player in the country. But then, you know, then things kind of slowed down, tapered off, and some of the kids that were at the top of their boards are taking their time a little bit when they thought maybe they might commit. So, you know, so like I said, they need to have a good June. I think they will keep building on a class that they got off to a good start with.
This class that's coming in is sitting at 25, 26, somewhere in that neighborhood. Have you identified maybe a handful of guys that could come in and could make an impact, could be key contributors right away?
Yeah, we got a story on the front page right now. I got top five freshmen, and then five more, I think, that just based on opportunity at positions of need, they got a chance to play. And, you know, you like what they did on the interior of both lines, defensive and offensive line. The kid from Texas, Calvin Avery, D-tackle, is just a wrecking ball kind of D-tackle, and I think he's going to step in, play right away, jump right into the rotation. Vertus Brown, the defensive lineman who, you know, originally from Mount Carmel in Chicago and played at IMG Academy in Florida, he's got a chance. I mentioned Carlos Sandy, the wide receiver, who I like quite a bit, a small kid, but real quick. You know, those are kind of the guys I think that got a chance. And then, you know, they got quite a few defensive backs coming in, and then they need somebody to step up. And you don't know what to expect from them yet until you see them in camp, but they got a chance to come in and play.
What about some of the quarterbacks in that class? Cam Thomas, of course, the only scholarship quarterback that was here in the spring. What do those guys bring as far as a challenge to him?
Well, that's going to be a good battle. I mean, that's going to be the number one thing we're watching in, you know, at camp when it opens, is the quarterback position. They got the three true freshmen, Matthew Robinson, MJ Rivers, and Karan Taylor from Peoria. They all bring something kind of different. You know, I think Taylor is a kid that it's good. He's a good player for the spread option. You know, he's a running quarterback. MJ Rivers is a big, tall pocket passer. And then Matthew Robinson maybe has the best all-around skill set. He's a kid that can throw on the move, has a good arm, is a gunslinger type. And then A.J. Bush, of course, the transfer, fifth-year transfer from Virginia Tech. And I don't think you bring in a fifth-year guy to ride the bench. I think they think he's going to compete with Cam Thomas for the starting job, and we're anxious to see what he can do. He's never really proved himself to be a Power 5 starting quarterback at two stops, you know, at Nebraska and Virginia Tech. But, you know, Rod Smith likes him. He singled him out, and he's going to try to coach him up and see if they can get him to play.
I wonder if we've ever gone into a season with the quarterback situation so unstable. I think that you got one guy, I mean, he's going to have a big advantage because he's returning, but the other four, it looked to me like it could go any direction. I mean, do you recall anything quite this open?
Yeah, last year. I mean,
wait a minute. They'd pretty much decided on Crouch.
They had, you know, but I don't think we watched Chase Crouch, and they could have decided on him all they want, but, you know,
he didn't
look like a Big Ten quarterback to any of us. You know, I think they have more talent now at the position, and with the, you know, some guys left, obviously, and they have more talent, but they're very young, obviously. But that's going to be the thing that everybody's going to be asking about every day at camp. We're going to be watching close. We're going to see who jumps out and you know, who has a good camp, and it's going to be really interesting and definitely something to watch on day one.
Have we seen Cam Thomas enough to answer that question? Does he look like a Big Ten quarterback?
No, I don't think so. A freshman, you know, you throw a freshman in the mix like that, nobody's going to look all that great. And Cam's got to work on his accuracy. That's the big thing. You know, he's got a pretty good arm. He can run. We saw that. He's a smart kid. He picked up the offense really quick, picking up this new spread offense in the spring. But no, we haven't seen enough from him yet. We don't know what kind of quarterback he's going to be yet. He did not look good, you know, thrown into the mix as a freshman with the few starts that he got. Like, he had five interceptions and no touchdowns. Not a very good stat line, obviously. So we're going to see, you know, and like I said, I think AJ Bush is going to, they want him to start. I think, you know, a fifth year guy, and you don't bring in a guy like that to sit the bench. But you know, it's something we're going to be talking about from now all the way through the first game against Kent State.
Well, if this is a building season, and I think it is there some advantage to starting a fifth-year guy? I mean, wouldn't they be better off to go with somebody younger that's going to develop, if that person shows the qualities that would make him a good quarterback maybe a year from now?
I think you play the best guy. Cause, you know, this is not to where you get a better draft pick if you tank. You know,
yeah.
You try to win every year. You know,
yeah.
you don't go out and then,
that's
you know, maybe
point.
Last year a little bit of that with 10 freshmen starting and 18 freshmen playing. You know, I think they were trying to build. But year three, you want to make progress. Can't go out and have another 2-10 season just for recruiting purposes and for fan support and donor support and all that kind of stuff. You know, you're building a brand-new multi-million-dollar football performance center that you're trying to raise funds for. They got to have some progress. They got to go out and win some games. And if A.J. Bush is the guy that's going to help them win more, he's got to be the guy that starts. And I wouldn't play a guy just to develop him. You got to try to go out there and win some football games.
What do you see at the linebacker spot, and what are the chances of getting some help there?
Oh, they need help. You know, a fifth-year guy would have been great. I don't think they can get one at this point. Yeah, it's a little bit late, but it's the position that you worry the most about on the team. This has not been a team that's been good at stopping the run. You know, and then you lose Trey Watson, who transferred to Maryland, one of your leading tacklers on the team, starting middle linebacker. They got to have somebody who surprises in camp. You know, one of these young guys come in and surprise, and maybe a freshman come in and make an impact. I think they're okay at starting linebacker. The kid that got hurt and comes back, you know, blew out his knee. But, you know, Delshawn Phillips is pretty good. You know, I think he's going to lead the team in tackles. And DeLay Harding is a good run stuffer, a physical kid. But the depth there is not good. The overall talent is not great. And it's the position you worry most about going into the season.
Yeah, Lovey really likes this Hansen, this guy you're referring to. And we haven't seen enough to really know. But that, you know, the other thing that Lovey keeps bringing up is they only use two linebackers an awful lot. More than half the time, they've got a fifth defensive back in there, you know, third safety. And so maybe you don't need so many linebackers. I don't know, but I've never seen a linebacking any more thin than it is at Illinois right now.
Yeah, I agree. And, yeah, like Jake Hansen, the kid you mentioned, he blew out his knee early in training camp, and they do like him at the will linebacker position, but we just haven't seen him play, you know. Played a little bit, but not very much. They do play the nickel quite a bit, you know, and Lovey likes these physical safeties who are kind of hybrids, who can stuff the run, come up and make big hits and force turnovers. And they have those kind of guys on the team. So they'll be in the nickel quite a bit, but Lauren, the good Illinois teams have always had great linebackers. There was a time when we were calling Illinois linebacker U, along with Penn State and some other programs. So they need somebody at the position to make an impact, some playmakers, and I don't see it on the roster right now, but hopefully somebody breaks out in camp this year.
Another couple of minutes with Doug Bouchon, the publisher of Orange and Blue News, Rivals.com. Where do you have the incoming class, Illinois football recruiting class, ranked? Is it top 50?
Yeah, it's right around that mark. I think I don't remember exactly where Rivals had it. It was around the 50 mark. I'm pretty sure in the 40s, something like that. And it's pretty decent. It's not as good as last year's class, you know, where you had a whole bunch of kids that played, and you know, but it's got some players. You know, it's got some depth. I think the key for the class is going to be, you know, how do some of these under the radar defensive backs pan out? Are they think they got some guys who can run, some guys who can play, and then is there a skill position player in the class that's going to be better than his ranking? You know, maybe the running back from California, or maybe one of the wideouts are a little bit better than what they were ranked. But, you know, I love what they've done with the lines, both the offensive and defensive lines. They're building the program from the inside out. They're getting more physical, and they can compete now in the Big Ten West with some of the more rugged teams, you know, like Iowa and Wisconsin. But they're going to need some kids to play above the ranking, I think, from this class, and they need a quarterback to step up and be good.
Hey, Doug, good stuff. Always appreciate talking to you. Thanks for your time.
Hey, you're welcome. Anytime. Thank you.
Talk to you soon. Doug Bouchon from Orange and Blue News, Rivals.com. Check him out, Illinois.rivals.com. for the work that he does, along with Brad Sturdy on basketball, Kedrick Prince as well on basketball. It is 10:44. We'll take a timeout and be back with more on Saturday Sports Talk. Stay with us. Ten 10:47. Phone line is open for the next 9 or 10 minutes if you want to jump in. 356-9397 is the phone number. Some other items we haven't had a chance to get around to yet, but bear mentioning, Brent Spillane, another busy week for him. Of course, early in the week, he was a third-round pick, the Illini baseball player, third-round pick as an outfielder to the Cincinnati Reds. You saw what the slot money was for that, right?
Yeah, over 700.
$716,000.
Yeah.
And then he's also learned later in the week that he's a finalist for the Dick Houser Player of the Year Award, which will be announced a week from today.
No player in Illinois history has ever been involved with so many awards.
And he was the District 5 Player of the Year.
It's one thing after another, and there's still some to be decided.
And it'll be interesting to see when he signs, where he goes, how quickly he moves along. So that'll be fun to watch. If you're a golf fan, you can kind of keep an eye out on a bunch of different tournaments this week and see some stuff. Steve Stricker is playing down at the St. Jude Classic. He fell back a little bit yesterday, but Mike Small is playing after being named the Midwest Region College Coach of the Year for the 9th time earlier this week. He's playing out in Des Moines, Iowa in a Champions Tour event. He shot a 69. 3 under par, so he's hanging in there. That's the Principal Charity Classic in Des Moines. I mentioned Stricker at 4 under par in the St. Jude Classic. Dustin Johnson leads at 10 under par. And Nick Hardy, Brian Campbell, Scott Langley, Luke Guthrie are all playing in the Web.com event up in suburban Chicago. So a lot of former Illini out there on the golf scene. Kind of fun to keep track of those guys. Smalley playing in the first of what will be a handful of tournaments for him this year. He'll play in the PGA Professional once again and try to qualify for the PGA Championship. So, busy time. A lot going on. One of the other topics that Josh Whitman talked about, there were several dozens perhaps that we touched on the other day, but one was hockey coming to the University of Illinois. That's been a hot topic and one that we kind of wanted an update on. And here's what Josh had to say about that.
It's a 2 to 2.5 year project from when we're in a position to say, yes, let's do this. We hope that we might be able to give that green light as early as this winter sometime. And so you're looking at a couple years post that to see a team take the ice and start to compete. But it is. It's a project that we're incredibly excited about. The downtown location is really a great opportunity for Champaign-Urbana, for the University of Illinois, and for our athletic program, for volleyball, for wrestling, for gymnastics, and for the economic benefit that will come to the entire community. And the university is committed to the idea, to the location, and looking forward to moving forward.
That's AD Josh Whitman talking about hockey and the possibility of it coming downtown. Wouldn't be far from where we're sitting right now, would it, Lauren?
Well, they're getting closer and closer. I would have thought, you know, if you asked me this several years ago, I would have thought the campus was a logical place. But now I see the advantages coming down here. And, of course, once you build that structure, then you put 3 other sports into it, and men's and women's gymnastics, and you got volleyball and wrestling. So along with hockey, you're going to have a lot of action in that building, particularly in those months when they overlap, when the sports overlap.
And when there's not a lot going on in there, you can use it for other uses. You can put some concerts in there.
Yeah, that'll be the summer, so it'll be a wide open. Better put air conditioning in there.
I wonder if that would pit, just thought of this, I wonder if that would pit that facility against the State Farm Center and trying to attract shows to town. I'm guessing they'd work together on the size of the show, obviously.
Yeah, I think that's right. The size would be the main factor, because just to have 3,000 or 4,000 come to the assembly hall, it looks like it's
right.
Empty. But if you put 4,000 in a 5,000-seat arena, then that's a little different. It looks pretty good.
Catching up on a couple of texts on subjects that we talked about earlier, we were talking about Brian Leonard and Myers Leonard, and we got a text from the area code 217. Leonard did not make a big impact his freshman year because he played a backup to Tisdale, playing very little. his sophomore year, he spent a lot of time on the bench with fouls. And this particular texter said that perhaps Bruce Weber didn't use him effectively.
Okay. Bruce Weber can't coach. But he's still coaching, and he's still making $5 million.
Yeah, just got a new contract as well. There was also a text about E.J. Liddell, who, by the way, made an unofficial visit to Ohio State this week. And this texter said from the 618 area code, if there exists a chance that E.J. Liddell would have to play center at Illinois, there is no chance he will play at Illinois.
Well, we'll know a lot more about that when this season's over, won't we?
We will.
We'll find out if Kane has got the potential to play in the Big Ten.
You know, that's a lot of, you know, Kendrick Prince talked a lot about Kane, and that's a lot to put on a young guy that nobody's ever seen play.
Yeah, well, that's right. I mean, he didn't have great numbers in high school. I mean, it isn't like he's coming in as a 15 rebound, 20 point scorer, none of that. I mean, but who knows? I just know that he's going to get a shot. I know that you talk about guys fouling out. Ibo Boyden would have fouled out most of the time if you left him in very long. He's strong in there, but he's also a little awkward, and he's not very good offensively. I don't think it was a great future for Ibo here. I don't know where he's going. I'm sure that he was criticized a lot in practice because he wasn't able to do all the things that the coach wanted him to do, and I don't think he was happy here, and I don't know where he's headed, but. He's got to find the spot where the interesting thing about all the transfers, I read this the other day, and I can't remember the exact number, but like 80% or more of the transfers are looking for an easier place to play.
Sure.
They're not moving up.
Yeah.
They're moving down. So many guys leave because they aren't getting to play and they want to find some level that they can play, which would be a lower level. And that's what he needs to find.
Let's go back to the phones. Gary in Urbana. Hey, Gary.
Yeah, I sort of disagree with the movement of hockey and volleyball and so forth to downtown Champaign.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we go to volleyball games and so many students can walk to Huff and go to see the stuff, the gymnastics, the volleyball and so forth. I don't think they'll go if it's down there. I really don't.
Well, they've determined that based on where the living quarters are, that it's just as close downtown as it is to Huff. I don't know. I mean, I'm just saying the movement is north, they tell me.
Yeah, look at
all the residence halls sitting right around.
Well, that's a good point. You're right about that.
Yeah, but a lot of the apartments where students end up in their career, a lot of that growth is going north.
But there are a lot of older people that attend volleyball. We know that. And there will be no parking there within another year. I'm not sure how fast that building is going up right next to Huff, but that parking area will be gone.
Yeah, that's really a problem. I haven't been able to figure out. I mean, I know why they did it, but we've been going for a long time, and we that lot is always packed. They don't park there, but that's where everybody goes. So
yeah.
I don't know what they're going to do when that starts.
Well, they're going to build a building downtown, and they'll have a parking area. I mean, that's part of the deal.
Build it downtown, it's going to have to be like a parking deck or something because there's not enough for like. I don't think for building a large open lot.
No, it'll be a deck, I'm sure. But what's wrong with that?
Because it takes so long to get out of them.
Okay, all right. I'm not going to satisfy you, so that's okay.
Hey, Gary, thanks for the call. Do appreciate that.
Okay.
Need to take one final break, and we'll do that, and be back with some final words after this. A couple of minutes before 11 o'clock. On Saturday Sports Talk, a reminder, 1 week from today, we will be doing this show in Chicago around the Hall of Fame Gala that is Friday night. We're going to be doing a three-hour show brought to you by Lohman Ray Insurance, special Sports Talk three-hour edition, 9 to noon next week. Some of the guests likely to be on the show next week include Lou Henson, Jim Grabowski, Kendall Gill, Dana Howard, Darren Fletcher, and many more, we hope.
Yep.
Should be a fun week. Fun weekend next week as well. Appreciate your time this morning. Our guests this morning have been Illini assistant basketball coach Chin Coleman. He was followed up by Marty Kaufman. We talked basketball with Kedrick Prince, baseball with Tom Ackerman from KMOX in St. Louis, and Illini football with Doug Bouchon. Thanks for a handful of callers that called in as well. So you're going to get some golf in this weekend, you think?
Well, I'm supposed to play tomorrow, but I'm looking outside and wondering what the weather's going to be like tomorrow morning.
I hope you can't play.
I know it. You're just jealous, aren't you?
I am jealous because I'm on the golf injured reserve list.
Well, let me just say this. If you played like I played, you wouldn't play.
All right, Lauren, we'll talk to you soon, and we'll see you again next week right here on Saturday Sports Talk. We appreciate your time. Moving up on 11 o'clock, WDWS in Champaign-Urbana. For Lauren Tate, I'm Steve Kelly. Have a good weekend, everybody.